Start it. You can entertain the people. Maybe give like a good introduction. Not for the episode, for the part before, you know.
What do you mean the part before? Like, do you want me to describe the violent, horrific, spicy poo I had today? Nope. Or do you want me to talk about therapy? Because I was just in therapy as well. So you choose. I can either talk about grieving my childhood in therapy. Oh, so sad. Oh. Or I can talk about shitting blood, basically. Therapy, we talked about my childhood today, and we were working on this exercise together, me and my therapist. She's really sweet. However, I don't have insurance. So this is just some really cool fun facts about me. I don't have insurance, so I pay a counseling intern. So she's actually a student, and that therefore I get like a 50% off discounted rate.
Should we vlog your birthday for the pod? Like, just record all day long?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that sounds awesome.
Okay, welcome to Weird Shit. That's not the name of our podcast.
Wake up, Chase. Do a line if you need to.
Welcome to 2 servings of fruit. Are you there?
Sorry, I'm not ready yet. I'm not even ready yet. You didn't say 3, 2, 1, go. You didn't say 3, 2, 1, go.
Why are you ready?
Way too ready. I'm getting prepared for a motherfucking podcast here. I don't know if you know that. We're actually on a podcast.
Well, I am prepared.
Oh, what are we discussing then?
Kink.
Give an outline for
kink,
me.
Kink.
Oh, okay.
Kink.
Okay, I'm probably ready.
Dude, I could give you more time.
No. It's okay.
Okay.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go. Say 3, 2, 1, go.
No, well, we've already started. I'm going to keep
No.
This
say
in.
3, 2, 1, go. Oh, I'm going to keep all this in. I'm going to keep... People don't give a fuck.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
3, 2, 1, go. That's what I said. Anyways. So, everybody, listen up. Not you bonking the microphone there. Anyways, today we are talking about K-I-N-K. Kink. Yeah. Sexual kinks. All the kinks in the world, all possible kinks will be covered today. In researching this project, I saw a horrific photo, however, and this will be my last episode on the podcast. So.
Should I put a clip here of you live discovering that photo? Here, I'll put it right here.
Oh no. I saw a horrific photo, Chase.
You saw a horrific photo?
I'm looking up things to talk about for our interview here. This person had needles through their face at multiple spots. Horrific photo. You can look this shit up. Oh my God, I'm actually about to faint.
Are you still looking at it?
No, thank God. Now I'm on a different... This one just has two ladies planking on each other, so that's okay. It was like a black and white photo. Ah! Jesus. Do you want to send... Here, you know what? Why don't I link you the article?
I don't need to see the photo.
No. I'm going to link the article to you. I mean, and for anybody that wants to know, Okay, Chase, I sent it to you.
Where? On my phone?
Yeah, I sent it over iMessage.
Oh, I see the needles. That's a kink?
Oh my goodness.
Torture
what
kink?
The hell? What the actual hell? I couldn't read the article because I can't look at that photo.
You made it sound worse than it is. It's not even
Are you
that
kidding
bad.
Me? There's so many needles in his face.
Trigger warning.
Trigger warning. Yeah, bunch of needles in your fucking face. Sorry. Whatever gets you there, but maybe not that.
Whatever gets you there. Okay. World's largest fetish club. It's called Torture Garden. Anyways.
Oh my god. Oh, we need to stop talking about this. Actually, I'm physically in pain.
Let's switch gears before we get into weird shit of the week.
Yeah. Well, we should also mention, stay tuned. We've got a special guest on at the end here. Our resident kink expert. We should bring him on multiple times even. Like get him.
Honestly,
get him
to talk. He was really, really cool to talk to. So.
Yeah, he'd be a good like recurring guest. We could talk about like, okay, here's our weird shit of the week. What do you think of this? Is this kinky?
We could have a segment called Is It Kinky?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Anyways, we're talking to John Pendle later on the episode. But first, we got weird shit of the week.
Oh, you know what? I'm changing my weird shit. I think I have a better, more topical one.
Cue jingle.
Cue that jingy jingy. Yeah.
You've ever seen this week. Yeah, welcome to Weird Shit of the Week. The week, the week.
My weird shit of the week is from the Toronto Sun.
Okay, reliable. Oh, mine's from the Toronto Sun.
And it could even tie into your kinks, people out there, listeners, because the headline is a woman hospitalized after...
Okay, no. Wherever this is going, no. Can you finish a sentence? This is a podcast, not a laugh cast. We're not here to have fun.
I don't know why it's so funny. Woman hospitalized after Chihuahua.
Okay, I like where this is going now.
Chihuahua poo.
You like to say poo. Oh, poo. Poo is on my body.
Okay, woman hospitalized after Chihuahua poo gets in her mouth.
Oh my. What?
While sleeping.
What? No.
Why is this so
sorry,
funny?
The dog pooed in her mouth?
No, I don't know. I just need a second to breathe.
No, you're going so hard, like sleeping there, snoring. And then it's just like you wake up clogged. Throat shit, dog shit in your throat, clogging your throat.
She
did
was
she letting, choke or did she get a viral infection?
She was letting the dog sleep in her bed. She was hospitalized. It says a UK woman was hospitalized for 3 days after the family dog had an attack of diarrhea while sleeping next to her. And some of it got in her mouth.
Oh man. Oh my god, not the diarrhea attack. I've been there. I was there today, even.
Liam was there this morning, yeah.
Yeah, I was there. I was in the midst.
I'm actually... Can't believe I'm laughing so much at just the word poo.
you were poo and, like, uncontrollable, incapacitated. What was she hospitalized for, though?
Good question. She showed symptoms of gastrointestinal infection. Oh.
Oh my god, I'm gonna puke. I'm actually about to puke. I can't do this right now. I can't fucking deal with all this fucking piss and shit and fucking blood and needles and stuff. I'm feeling faint. I'm standing up for too long.
The woman said she was violently sick and vomited for hours. And the dog had it.
I'm blacking out.
So she didn't get really anything from the feces. She got, so the dog had a gastrointestinal infection, and she got the same gastrointestinal infection the dog had from the feces.
Okay, the last time we had some sort of infection transfer from animal to human, the whole world shut down for multiple years. So this lady better be on lockdown right now. I don't want COVID round two dog shit itis. Like, I don't want that.
She also has Crohn's disease and she could not eat anything for days.
Oh, I feel bad for her now. Does she have a GoFundMe?
No. She said she has, but to end on a positive note, she said she has forgiven the dog.
How could you be mad at the little Poochie Chihuahua, little Beverly Hills Chihuahua?
But she said she'll be more mindful of what position we sleep in the future. Like, yeah, the dog's ass, not your face.
Why didn't Doggy feel fucking diarrhea coming along? Like, was it startled awake even too? Like, I don't know how the situation even happened.
Oh, we need and to get project, her.
How close is this asshole to her mouth? That it, not you dying at dog poo.
Oh, I need to go.
I'm getting you go. A box of dog shit for your birthday so you can laugh for a whole year straight.
We need to get her on the pod, this woman.
Okay, well, mine's not necessarily about a woman that eats dog shit as much as a woman that spews dog shit. Do you see my little transition there?
Yeah, I got it. Good job.
Mine is Marjorie Taylor Greene in tantric sex divorce drama.
Oh.
Yeah, sex divorce drama. Three words you just want to hear over and over and
tantric
over.
Tantric sex.
Yeah, tantric. She is having a tantrum. And in this photo that they have on this article, she's posing next to this beaver statue. It's really weird. I don't even know. This bronze beaver statue that's like arms wide open, ready to hug. And she's just like, so love that photo for her.
But wait,
her
doesn't it mean tantric sex as in tantric sex? Like what Davey Wavy taught us?
What's that?
It's like more, it's more so about like the sexual journey and body mapping, and like it's more of a spiritual
Maybe
sex.
I wasn't listening. I guess I wasn't listening.
Sorry, Davey.
Anyways, yeah, so she's getting a divorce because she was cheating with a bunch of people at her gym for over a decade.
Over a decade. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So this woman, might I just add, she is like the holier than thou morality police. This is a Christian nation, blah, 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 all that bullshit. She was cheating with a tantric sex guru. So I think that is what you're referring to.
Oh,
but it's just kind of, it's not just like funny for the fact that, you know, she's, you know, getting a divorce because she's a shitty cheating bitch, but the fact that it was like this wild sex she's having at the gym, like she's horny, is basically the answer to the question here, which is Marjorie Taylor Greene horny? And the answer is
the
yes.
Answer is always.
She's severely horny. I remember one particular pool party where she was lying draped over Craig, who is the tantric sex guru. Oh,
okay.
He was draped over his lap drinking a beer. She was quite open about it. We all thought her marriage was falling apart. But then I took my son to her son's birthday party and things seemed totally normal between her and her husband, even if they were a little lukewarm. This is a quote from a source close to her. So she's a crazy, horny sex maniac who is like so anti anybody else having sex.
Literally, she wants it all for herself.
Bitch. Yeah. Anyways, that was just my kind of fun weird shit.
We should have her on the podcast too. We should have her on the podcast.
I would love to talk to Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's evil, but it would be interesting. I mean, not that we should be giving her a platform. That being said, we're actually probably taking her platform away by having her on this podcast.
We would just bully her.
I wouldn't bully her. I would just say, you know, what was the sex like? Was it worth it? Do you feel a little bit like an idiot because you're like so like a like huge bitch? But yeah, that was my weird shit. Honestly, it didn't live up to yours, frankly.
Mine only was exciting because I couldn't actually contain myself. So
I thought this would have more information about what was actually going on at this gym. Because also, I don't know if you've seen her. She's like a power lifter. Like, this woman is out there.
Is she really?
Have you seen that video of the woman who's like powerlifting and like and pissing herself while she does it? Because she's lifting so heavy that her pelvic floor just gives out.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, wow. She is kind of jacked.
Yeah. But have you seen the video I'm referring?
No.
Look up female power lifter pissing themselves because of pelvic floor distress.
I did think, I think I found who she was cheating with.
Is he cute?
I'll send you a pic and you tell me. Okay, yeah, I see this whole thing is dedicated to women who pee while powerlifting, so I don't actually need to watch that.
Okay, so is that a kink?
Pee is a kink.
Peeing while powerlifting specifically.
Well, everything's a kink.
There is a guy. There is a guy.
Did you see the picture I sent you?
No. Oh, whoopsies. Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know who I expected, but it sure as hell wasn't that. Oh. This man, let's do a little described video here. He's got a triangle of chest hair, a huge triangle of chest hair, red and yellow underwear, and like a mohawk and a beard.
Why is his chest hair in the shape of like a trident?
I don't know. I also just don't understand, like, Margie girl. That's the one? That's the one that did it for you?
He's a tantric sex coach.
Jesus.
Anyways, we're talking about
what do you think Margie Taylor's green? Yeah. Are we kink shaming if we make fun of Margie Taylor Green for having a lot of sex?
Well,
when is it okay to kink shame?
I don't know, but I just want to say that me and Liam are exploring some probably pretty out there kinks today. Yes. And when we talk to John later, we explore some pretty out there kinks. And
we were respectful.
We are respectful.
And I am maintain that respect.
Sometimes we will have reactions.
A lot of, yeah.
And we're not shaming. We're just shocked.
Naming.
It's all respectful. Whatever, like Liam said, whatever gets you there, you know, you do you. Yeah.
Whatever gets you there, exactly. One thing I find interesting, and this is something I'm just learning about today, is like within this community of people who are particularly kinky, there are like conventions, which I did not really know about, which makes so much sense.
I knew that there were like leather conventions. Like I've heard of the leather conventions across North America, at least, but I didn't know there were like full fetish festivals. Like there's one in London I saw. I can't remember what it's called, but when I was researching for our guest, I saw like this big fetish festival in London. I was like, whoa, like thousands of people go.
Yeah, like international.
And like every club on the street in London has turned into like a fetish club. If it's that's not wild. Already, I'm like,
one thing though, I will say there is these are expensive, you know, leather's not cheap. You know, you go to Aritzia, you try to find some leather pants. First of all, they're pleather. Second of all, it's still like $200. So these people that are out there in like for real leather and like and latex and like all of that, and they got swings and, you know, structurally you're putting that into beams. So you're getting in there deep. That stuff ain't cheap.
Yeah. And especially if like beyond leather, which I guess we mostly talk to John about leather later, because that's kind of like what he's mostly like the community he's in. But even like other kinks require like equipment and like gear.
Yeah. And if you think about it, sex is such a basic and like primal activity. It's like, you know, investing so much money into it. It's like at the end of the day, you got to get naked. Bodies are free.
But people could have like sex in their leather gear still.
I would just like to say that my kink is just getting paid $1 million. So if anyone wants to engage in my kink, that would be really helpful. If you could send me $1 million, I'd be really happy.
Okay, that's a cool kink. How would you define kink, Liam?
I think we had this discussion in Germany.
Did we?
A fetish is something you need. Like, it's like you're not going to be able to go through the sexy sex without having your fetish requirement met. So like, I get that. And I think a kink is like something you're like into, like it just makes it better for you.
Yeah. Okay. I was reading today. I can't remember the exact quote, but it was like kink, because there's a big distinction between kink and fetish in the kink community. And kink is focusing on enhancing the sexual experience with your partner. Uh-huh. And fetish, it said, is like almost replacing your sexual partner with the fetish. Like, that's what gets you off. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
So,
well, I will say, I feel like, you know, for straight people, talking about anything regarding sex is like almost like, oh, like, you know, like you never get like a, if you're straight, no one's gonna say like, oh, what are you into?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I feel like for gay people, gay men in particular, it's so like just like out there. It's just like, oh, what are you into? So I feel like maybe does that count as a kink? Like, just be like, I think maybe kink,
I don't know,
almost even falls into the realm of just like talking about what you like sexually.
Okay.
Like, in that sense, anything's a kink.
Okay, Liam, what's your kink then?
Probably definitely not needles. I could say what my kinks are not.
Not needles? Or?
Not needles. No, definitely not needles. That was horrific. Oh, you know what? I honestly think I'm probably more boring now. Now that I've gotten older. You say got older. Actually, I'm not boring. I would be into like lots of crazy different things for sex. I would do anything once, maybe, except for needles. Needles, bodily fluids. I don't love in general. Poop. No poop. I'm not good with blood in general either. I don't like being restrained, actually. I get a little claustrophobic.
Yeah, so. It depends on the, I mean, I don't, yeah, I don't think I like being fully restrained, but like a light situation that's not so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I just get a little panicky and then I'm like, so yeah, claustrophobia builds in there.
What about BDSM?
See, but that is bondage. No.
But it could be more like, and that. I think what about it's like
a visual aspect? Like, I like passion, you know? So in that sense, not, I don't know. One thing, okay, so in our interview, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, everybody. An interesting point that John made was like kink and that community and everything kind of just puts a name on things that people already kind of generally enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you like hold your breath, if you're about to finish. I'm a good Christian woman. Okay. I'm vanilla. Anyways, he was talking about like, oh, like that's breath control. But if you say breath control, that's like a scary, daunting thing. So I get that. So like, everyone's a little kinky.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I'm not into like group activities. I don't know if you've, I mean,
I've never done a group activity.
No, but like one thing I feel like is very prominent for gay people is that in particular, like I keep seeing this tweet coming around on Twitter, like about this guy who was like talking about his escapades at a club one night. And he's like, there was this guy and then I had sex with him. And then there was this line forming of guys to have sex with him. And then I started bottoming. And then there was this line forming of guys who had sex with me, and it was crazy. And I'm like, okay, I would never actually
be in that situation
like ever
stressful.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, if we're getting real here, the one thing that I never understand about gay sex is like, how are you guys always ready to go? Like,
for real, even when we talk to John and he talks about some encounters he's had, I'm like, you just see someone and you jump into it. Like, I'm sorry, I need time to prepare not only my body, but my fucking mind. Like,
mentally, I need to, yeah, I'm like, okay, am I bloated right now? What have I had to eat in the last 24 hours?
Maybe we're doing something wrong.
Honestly, no, like, how do people have, gay sex? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense to me.
If we're talking about the most prevalent kinks that I would say are in like the gay community, obviously leather's a big one, but I would say less involved in like gear and stuff would just be like, there's always like people who are into, so many people who are into like a subordinate dominant dynamic.
Well, yeah, that's just, that's expected. But
that's a kink, Liam.
Okay. Well, I'm kinky.
Ah!
Oh my god, don't tell my mom.
Is Chelsea listening to this?
Probably. With the baby.
Oh, she's learning so much about her uncle.
Oh. Yeah, like, I'd say, like, when it comes to actual objects, they're almost like a turn off.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. I've used handcuffs before. Like, I've used some objects, but nothing like, and even that, I'm like, it doesn't really do anything for me at all.
Like, you go into a sex shop, there's so much stuff in there.
Yeah. How do you know what to, should we do a live podcast going to a sex shop?
I was literally just looking up sex toys right now. Like, let's go through it. Let's look at a shop right now and see what we can find. So Pink Cherry. I mean, these are just like, okay, for yourself. That makes sense. You got to do what you got to do. Where's the like craziness? Let me see. Okay. They've got clearance, lingerie, pumps. Oh, those freak me out. Penis pumps. That's terrifying.
What does that do?
It creates like suction. So your penis gets engorged, but it looks like it's about to burst, frankly.
Ew.
Oh my God. Just the thought of that. Jesus Christ.
What about, okay, let me name some kinks you told me if you would try them or have tried them.
Okay.
Fisting.
No, okay, no. I don't even like a finger up the butt. Frankly, it feels worse. Like your bony knuckles, you got nails on your fingers. Doesn't feel good.
No, it has to be. No, I don't mind if fingers, but it has to be done properly.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'd rather, like, it's just, it's easier if it's like actual pee pee.
Peeing. What's the formal word for that? Oh, what's the
water
word?
Sports?
Water sports.
No.
I've never done fisting. I've never done water sports. If I'm being completely honest, I'm not even that opposed to water sports, if I think about it.
I don't like pee. I don't. Where are you gonna do it on the floor?
In the street,
over the floor. Ridiculous. I have peed on people before, but that's because I was blackout drunk and it was an accident. So,
I think we've told that story.
Yeah. So in that sense, I've done water sports, but it wasn't in a sexual context.
Okay.
It was in like a practical context.
Bull whipping.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a big giant whip. Like those whips.
That
like,
sounds too painful. That doesn't sound like it. That sounds like it would hurt.
Okay, what about like paddling? Like with a paddle?
No.
Okay, what about...
No.
What about like...
If you pull that out, I'd be like, why the... I'd actually be like, why the fuck do you have that?
I would run away. Could you imagine you're like at like a hookup and they pull out like this big wooden paddle?
I'm into like spanking, like that's fine.
But a paddle is just like a step up from that.
It's just like, it just looks medieval. Like it doesn't look modern.
Okay.
Is it like they need a modern paddle?
What about like a chastity kink?
Not for me.
Isn't that so like a chastity kink? Like you're it turns you on that your partner isn't having sex? Like, I don't get it.
I think it's just more like because they keep your penis so like secured, you know?
Yeah. Well,
like I'd be worried if I were to get a boner, like am I about to like actually hurt myself?
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like it doesn't let you.
Here's a tame one that I've engaged with that you might have, like public situations. That's a big kink.
Yeah, that's fun, but that's more like, oh, like, oh my God,
it's like the risk of it all. Yeah,
I think that goes back to like passion, just being like so in the moment. It's just like, oh, can't keep our hands off each other.
I got the idea to do an episode on kink while I was in Berlin, because like the amount of sex Berlin clubs and I didn't really go to any.
I think sex clubs almost counts as like a kink. Like it's public, it's group involved, and you're kind of exploring a million different things. I would be like interested to see one, maybe like just to go inside and like what's the vibe.
But I
the
one thing that I'd be
dreading, I think, is just the smell. Like you go into a sex shop and it smells like there's a lot of fluids in here, and I'd just be a little like, it's sweaty. Like sex is gross inherently. Sex is a little gross.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like I got rejected from Berghain twice, so I never got to go inside, but I've heard stories
of grates in the floor. And you can go if you go a floor down, you can stand under the grates and people piss into them and pee on you.
I actually feel kind of guilty every time I try to go to the bathroom in that club. I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, guys.
I'm sorry, I'm wasting it. And just everyone's naked. I don't know. I've never been in it, but I did go to that one club. Definitely too much of a prude
for things like that.
I saw at one club, people in the pup masks, the puppy, dog masks with collars and leashes and stuff.
Also not for me.
No, not for me either, but
I think one part of this that I just I'm not part of the community is just because I'm that just looks to me, it just looks a little silly, personally speaking.
No judgment zone.
Okay, no judgment, but
no, I get it.
Visually, I don't like the look.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not
I don't know.
It's
I'm definitely a sexual person, but I do agree that when I think about sex, I do think sex is gross.
It is a little.
I like sex, but after sex and even just thinking about sex when I'm not in the mood for sex, it's that is gross. I'm not a person who's so passionate about the act of sex.
I think I'm a little insecure with my body. Just I don't want to be.
Oh yeah. There's a whole other fucking, I couldn't just go into these clubs.
Yeah. Sorry, but I'd just be I'm naked. I'm naked. Ah, I think to be a truly honest, kinky person, you need to be just fully, you need to be confident in your body.
I agree. And there are people in Berlin who I friends who went to these sex clubs or clubs that you had to be naked to go into. Uh-huh. And you wear your clothes and the bouncer's what are you wearing underneath? And you tell them or you show them. And then when you go to reception, they tape over your phone and then you have to take off your outside clothes and check them. And then you go in naked or half naked or whatever. And I was I cannot do that. I cannot do that. And they were I mean, everyone says once you do it, it's really good for your self-confidence. And I don't doubt that, but I don't think I could get there.
I don't even usually take my shirt off at the beach. Okay. I'm not going into a room full of strangers naked.
Yeah, no.
Also, what do you wear? Do you wear shoes? Do you wear flip-flops?
You wear normal shoes and then you just check them.
But but when you're inside, are you barefoot?
Oh, you're barefoot.
I don't like that. That floor or maybe has got socks on it.
I don't know.
You're gonna you're gonna be watching around with gungy socks.
Or maybe you are just naked with shoes on. I don't know. I don't know.
And then you're naked with shoes on, and it's what the hell's going on?
I didn't go, but my friend in Berlin would most of the time not even have sex with people. It's not really about that. I don't know. It's really weird. It's not weird.
Do you go for happy hour?
Just for it's fun, a fun, accepting, safe space. But to get in, you're inherently judged by the bouncer. So I don't understand how that can be a totally safe space. It's really. Clubbing culture, sex clubs, really strange paradigm there.
Yeah, it's a duality. You go dance naked, I guess.
Yeah.
That could be kind of fun. Is Burning Man, okay, this is what I was going to say. Is Burning Man a kink festival?
Is it?
I don't know. Some of them get naked. They probably have a lot of sex.
I don't think Burning Man's a kink festival. I just think it's a music festival or arts festival.
Well, is sex art?
I don't know. Ask Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, she would know. She's the most artistic woman I've ever met in my life.
What are some other kinks? Oh. One kink that I think actually just my personality would never allow is voyeurism or whatever it's called. Voyeurism?
Oh, having
you other watch your partner you have watch... sex with someone?
Oh my God. I would fucking no. Or you think you're thinking of cuckolding?
Is that it? What's voyeurism?
That's you would let people just watch you have sex or you watch people have sex. Cuckolding, it's you porn. Watch your partner have sex with someone else.
Let me look up cuckolding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it says could be a fetish. So maybe not actually for this episode. Whatever. A fetish or kink in which a person gets turned on by their partner having sex with someone else. Oh, yeah. That's what I meant. And yeah. I could actually never. I think I would actually.
Never.
I would spontaneously combust.
I could cry thinking about it.
Okay, relax. Not you, just like, I'm mad at Garrett just thinking about it.
No, I don't think that would work for me. Okay, so according to this Men's Health article, we've got BDSM. That's kind of your standard.
Yeah.
Okay, so but this is, it's saying like this, whoever this researcher was, BDSM is such an umbrella term that he's like, I found that 93% of men and 96% of women have fantasized about some aspect of BDSM before. But yeah, that's so intense. Like, I would say probably everybody is into that.
Yeah, so everybody's like, everybody's a little kinky, but then if you were to label it BDSM, like John says, that's going to freak people out.
I also think that there is some inherent aspect of sex that is about like power differential in some way. And it's like, it can go back and forth even at the same, in the same encounter, you know what I mean? But there is like a give and take always, you know?
Yeah.
And then next it has fetishes, which is, again, also just a really specific thing, a specific object like boots or socks or non-genital body parts like feet or armpits. I mean, I could be into pits. Pits are kind of hot. It's like, but that's just like, I find all aspects of like the male body like attractive. Maybe not feet. Like, I don't have a foot fetish where the, this is this guy on H3. I don't know if you watch H3. Shout out to them. He's saying, you know, just supporting small businesses. Anyways, they had this guy on who was like into watching men drive barefoot.
Drive specific?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Driving specifically, and he would pay guys to do it. And I thought, like, I could get into that. I like driving. Driving's enjoyable. I don't mind sending a guy a video of my feet, but like, it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. But fetishes are different than fetishes are different.
Yeah, well, we're learning. We're learning.
How does that work that? Yeah, we're actively learning. If you're like into feet while you have sex with someone, like you're into like playing with their feet, like is that a kink then?
I don't know. It's also just physically like,
is that a kink? But then if you're like seeking out like foot pics for your own like enjoyment, is that when it becomes a fetish?
I don't know. Another thing that it's reading about, or I'm reading about here, is that straight men, a common one is women's shoes.
I think I've heard of that.
Like high heels or like open toed shoes and things like that. Like, guys are into like, ooh, it's like a sexy heel. It's like, I didn't even know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Or like used things. Like, do you wear the heel? Lots of girls sell like used things online.
Yeah, I think I've also heard this is that apparently one part of the brain can be like, this is like a genetic thing. Like, some kinks can be genetic. This is something I want to touch on at the end too, is where do kinks come from? But anyways, that some kinks can be genetic. And like, if you're like into...
At the end of what?
This podcast. We're doing a podcast right now. Like, I don't know if you noticed the microphone.
After the interview or before it?
Before the interview. At the end of our discussion here.
Okay, sorry for interrupting.
Anyways. There's like a part of the brain that's like close to the pleasure area, and it's the scent area. And like scent, yeah. And like people who are into like one specific scent can be in the, like are generally into more. And it's like, it's weird. I forget exactly how this worked, but basically like smell, like used things like that is like a very common, is very genetically linked.
Interesting.
Physiological, even.
Where else do kinks come from? Do you have more information?
I did look it up. The psychology of sexual kink. And basically there's like it says that kink can develop innately in childhood or be adopted later in life. And social stigmatization of kink can be a detriment to mental health. So that can also kind of like there can be a repressive societal aspect of kink. So it's just so layered.
I don't know how to dive into that. I'm not fucking educated enough to dive into those layers.
I think it is interesting to think of like, okay, you know, one, where does sexuality come from? That's a whole conversation in and of itself. And that can, some people say it's genetic, some people say it's early childhood responses and whatever. But regardless, it does seem like people's kinks are like, they grow into them at least.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of like, when you're not necessarily genetics, but like when you're maybe like, especially if you're gay and you're like first starting to hook up with people, as most young gays do. And like, I wonder how many of those sexual encounters like inform the type of like sex you look for.
Yeah. I do think there's probably like a cultural aspect to it too. But like, you, as you're introduced to sex, as you grow, like you maybe don't even, maybe you don't explore all of it because societally there's just like norms, you know?
Yeah.
Like what are sexual norms? Back to this list of kinks and whatnot. Bodily fluids.
Oh my God. I was thinking in, this is like a graphic story. So trigger warning.
Jesus Christ.
I was thinking about like, because I was thinking about like sub and dom kinks. This one guy saying like, are you into scat play? I think I must have been like 18. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. And he just sent me like a full like four pictures.
Of poo?
Of his face covered in shit.
I don't judge, but I judge.
And I was taken aback. I don't think I've ever blocked someone so fast, which sorry if that's mean, but I just asked, what is it? I didn't say, can I see? All he had to respond with is poo. And I would have said, no, thanks.
Yeah, that's enough right there. Yeah, I don't think I could ever do that. I can barely look at my own poo sometimes.
Okay. Okay.
We're almost on this list.
Oh, we're still going.
Voyeurism, we already touched on.
Does it say what that is, though? Is that what you said?
This is fantasies about watching someone else undress or have sex.
Okay.
Is probably voyeurism. And then exhibitionism is like the reverse of that, which is like people watching you have sex. Definitely couldn't be an exhibitionist.
No.
I've thought about like, oh, maybe I could do like an OnlyFans and just make some money. I think I'd feel shame.
I've had sex on like a hotel balcony before. That's,
I would do that. That'd be, or maybe I am into it then. I don't know. I think I would just, I mean, I go back and forth on these. Age play. Okay. So like older, younger. I like older guys.
But that can also be like a, that can also be like a toxic.
That can be. Yeah, that can be problematic, especially for straight people, I think. I mean, even gay people. But I think, again, that's probably like the power differential in play.
Yeah.
Again, we should, of course, say consent is key for all of these things. Consent is first and foremost. Furries is number 7 here. Yep. I'm number 1 on that list. I got my tail on right now. Corking me.
Jesus, can you go through this list, please?
Gender play. Okay, this is interesting. A lot of cisgender people use their fantasies as a way of exploring their gender role and or expression. So about 1 in 4 persons had fantasies about cross-dressing, while about 1 in 3 had fantasized about trading bodies with someone of another sex. I did not think that number would be that high.
Huh.
1 in 4. But that's all genders, too.
Yeah.
For example, several men reported what they described as forced feminization fantasies in which a partner forces them to dress as a woman.
Huh.
That sounds like a straight person thing, I will say. Because I think gay guys will just do it willingly. Not the four. Like, I think this is like a straight guy being like, yes. Cuckolding, no. Never.
Okay.
Not next. Happening in my existence. I don't even, if I'm hooking up with someone and it's like a very casual relationship, I still am not even, I'm not down. And then we've got food and sex. So apparently about 40% of this person's participants had fantasized about this before. 40%.
Food. Have you ever involved food and sex?
No, I think I would do it more in like a fun, kind of like cheeky way, like, ooh. Whipped cream, you know.
I've used like whipped cream in sex before.
You have?
I have.
That's hilarious. But that's like fun. Like, I think I like the idea of sex being more fun, like silly even.
Yeah, it was silly. It was funny. And also delicious.
That's kind of cute. Yeah. That could be like I could be into that, but not like in like, it's not like turning me on. It's just more of like a, like I just like activities. So, and I love food.
Liam, like, let's scrapbook while we have sex.
Like, yeah, let's do some silly poses, you know? Kama Sutra.
Yeah, no. I mean, especially when you're in a relationship and it's, like, more comfortable to, like sex doesn't explore have to be, like, things, so, like, serious. And yeah. I think, like, silly sex is fun.
We're doing so much to advance society with this podcast. It's ridiculous.
What? You're saying that sarcastically. What are we doing wrong?
No, I'm being serious. We're having an open, candid conversation about sex.
Can't even say
it. And we're not even shying away from any parts of sex, such as pee-pee.
I'm going to censor every bad word.
Bleep everything. Penis, penis, penis.
Okay. Are we done with your list? We have a whole interview to get into.
Yeah, we're done with the list.
So John won International Mr. Leather in 2003. For 20 years, he's been teaching BDSM workshops around the world. Mm-hmm. He's also a stand-up comic, and since the pandemic, has been working as a kink and just general life coach. So, yeah,
which is such an interesting life to have lived, and he seems like a really interesting guy. I honestly think we should have him back. We should have recurring guests.
Yeah.
Sure.
So stay tuned for that interview starting now
in just a second here. Welcome up, John. Hey, Johnny.
Oh, it's wonderful to see you. Sorry, wonderful to hear you because we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
Fucked up immediately.
I mean, we are seeing each other, but the viewers are hearing us, so that's fine. I wanted to give you a chance to just tell the listeners and tell us about you and how you got into the world of kink and leather and all of that.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name's John. My full name's John Pendle. Pronouns are he, him. I live in the United Kingdom. I think when I die, the first line of my biography will probably say he won International Mr. Leather in 2003. So I realize I peaked, you know, in my 32nd year. It's all been downhill since there. So there's a competition in Chicago called International Mr. Leather. If you follow that, I was the 25th winner. I was known as the Silver IML. And then I got to take a year off work and travel the world full time to leather events. And I very quickly realized my home was in the corner of the community that dealt with kink and BDSM and bruises, tag, got you, climb a tree, thump, ow, giggle. You know, that was me rather than the parading with a sash. That was not me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so then I'm curious about like this competition. How did that, what are you judged on?
So I qualified by winning the title Mr. Hoist. Okay. And the Hoist ran for 20 years in London. It was a fabulous sex club where you wore gear to get in, leather, rubber, industrial uniform, but you had to be wearing something butch to get in. And you could have sex and drink. It was fabulous. And then once a year, they would host a competition for Mr. Hoist, where you're really the opposite of a prostitute. You are holding up the sex. So they would bring out some oil drums and they put some planks on top and you get on top of the oil drums for 30 seconds and try and heckle the crowd before they heckled you. And that was really all you had was 30 seconds to make an impression. And then everyone had a bottle top on the way in and all the guys were numbered and you would put bottle tops in the box of the number of the guy you liked the most. I entered that in 2003. And it turns out it's possible to win Mr. Hoist if you've already had sex with everyone in the room. But then they took me to one side and said, you realize this is a qualifier for International Mr. Leather, which I'd heard of, but I hadn't been to any leather events outside the UK. I didn't know what it was. Turns out it's the sixth biggest convention in Chicago. Last year, I believe, before lockdown, the last one they had, I think 18,000 people went. Wow. As the largest fetish vendor market in the world. And the year that I entered, the competition lasted 5 days from Sunday, Wednesday night when you arrived through to Sunday when they sashed the winner. And you were judged every minute that you were outside your hotel room. The fact that I flew there in leather and landed at O'Hare Airport in leather got back to the judges. So there's about 60 men from around the world each year. They enter from lots of different countries and places. And the points are really tight at the top. Like if you drop a couple of points, you've moved from first place to fifth.
Wow.
So you really have to have a perfect score to win. And that does mean, unfortunately, leaning into whatever prejudice people may have. So I was told when I was preparing for it that, by the way, you can only be a top. You got to be dominant. You have to be a master, a sir, if you're going to win this. This is back in 2003. And I went, but I'm from Europe. In Europe, everyone is just whatever they feel. Like we're all allowed to do whatever kink we like on the day that we wake up. We can be tops and bottoms, but most of us are switches. And they said, that's fine in your private life. But if you're applying to be IML, you need to take all the pictures down off the internet where you look submissive or like a boy or, yes, feminine. Like, just can you go for the classical Tom of Finland, top to toe, muir cap to leather pants to knee-high boots? Just lean into that prejudice, because honestly, you're not going to win. If somebody takes against you, you're not going to win. So I did everything I was told and I won it.
So do you think that, so femme phobia, you would say, plays a part in the leather scene, or is that something that you would say has changed since 2003?
Both. So okay. Yes, it plays a part. It's changed for the better, but it still plays a part. And when I got in the leather community, when I was 20, there were guys in their 60s in the hoist who were incredibly misogynist. And I would quiz them about it and say, why? Because I don't have that antagonism towards women. And they said, it's because when we came out as gay, it was in the 50s and 60s when it was illegal in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And what would happen is, in order to survive, in order not to be the unmarried man on the street that kids threw rocks at, you got married to a woman. And then by the time the 70s came around and there were gay pop music in the charts and gay pride, and they realized, okay, I'm gay, by then they've got kids, families are getting ruined. So I could understand, although I didn't share that viewpoint of women, I could understand they've been made to get married. You know, this is where that's where the reticence to, I want to be in a space that's just men came from. And then in my naivety, I thought, well, that's not me. I don't have that prejudice because, you know, little perfect me. And now I realize, actually, in the last few years of therapy, when I was at school, even preschool, you know, kindergarten, before other kids knew that I was gay or what gay was, they knew I was different and they would call me a girl. And that hit home because I knew I wasn't a girl. So when I finally came out as gay, I said, that's okay. I can rationalize I'm gay. But I don't want to be a girl because that's how I was teased. So I'm going to be the butchest gay I can be. I'm going to be in the lumberjack, Harley riding, cigar smoking, hairy chest, beard wearing, leather bit of the gay community. I'm going to be a man. Can you see how that's loaded?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so in the same way that I could understand the path they'd taken and not shared it, I'm now beginning to understand the path I've been on and I don't want to share it. And I'm constantly worried whenever I MC an event now that I'm that dinosaur that all the young people look up to with horror at the attitudes I have. And I'm trying to do the work so I don't have those attitudes. But, you know, when I grew up, you didn't want to be effeminate because that's what you got beaten up for. It wasn't sexuality. It was gender. So I love it now. If I'm MCing an event and there's somebody strutting across the stage and their pronouns are they, them, and they're in a corset and leather heels and they're in a leather, like a Mr. Leather contest, and then they get to win it. And I just think the world has changed for the better.
Yeah, that's good. So it does. So the spaces are more inclusive now. That can happen now.
It can. Doesn't mean it always does.
Yeah.
I am cisgender, but I work with clients who are trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming. And I am very aware of the privilege I have when I walk through the world that I am not questioned. If I go into a toilet, nobody questions me. So yeah. I don't think it's changed enough, but it has changed some.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm curious. You mentioned, you know, getting into this when you were 20. What was that process like? What was your introduction? And then ultimately, how did you end up where you are now as a coach?
Oh, big question. Can I start at the age? So, like, I always knew what I was, but I didn't know that was what a gay person was till I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I knew what I was in terms of kink at the age of 4, but I didn't have the vocabulary for it. till I was in my 30s. But if I can give you the anecdote from when I was four, when I realized what I was, even though I didn't know what to call it. So at the age of 4 1/4, I was watching an episode of Doctor Who called Doctor Who and the Pyramids of Mars with Tom Baker and Elizabeth Sladen. And they were tracking down an alien that was pretending to be an Egyptian god that had built a very small pyramid in the English countryside for budgetary reasons. And the pyramid was patrolled by pairs of robot mummies. And because this was before CGI, everything was a practical effect. To get somebody inside, these mummies were extra big, extra tall, extra broad, extra deep. And the way they would kill you, if you were trespassing too close to the pyramid, a pair of mummies would come either side of a human that was stood upright, and mm-hmm. their pecs, their chests would be at neck height, and they would get closer and closer together like a sandwich, and they would squash the person and then stand back and the person would drop down dead. And at four, I had a little tingle in my tummy and I thought, I want that to happen to me. And lo and behold, I'm into big hairy bears and trampling and squashing and inescapable bondage and all the stuff that started age four when I didn't have the words to go, wow. That's what I like.
Yeah, wow.
That's hilarious. Well, what about, I mean, I guess, you know, from winning the competition, but what was the, was there a natural introduction to being like a leader, I guess, for people for kink or like, you know, getting into coaching?
Whew. So that's, we're going to the other end of the spectrum now because I'm 51. So what happened is I was International Mr. Leather, and that's like being Charlie Bucket from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You get the golden ticket and yeah. you get to go around the chocolate and sample everything. So every event I went to, they thought it was funny if they did the demo on International Mr. Leather. So I just got the golden ticket to the top table because, you know, if somebody's going to be set on fire, let's do it to the IML. So I got to try everything. And then through a process of both trying everything and being at the top table and my address book being filled with contacts of event promoters and other presenters, it quickly managed to transition into this is what my career will be. And for the next 7 years, I got booked for leather events. If they couldn't get the current International Mr. Leather, they could get me because I'd be on a microphone. I'd host their event. I'd host the talent show. I'd teach a workshop. But I think winning a title is like being radioactive in that eventually the radioactivity just disappears. And after 7 years, you better have another reason for them to book you because being IML from 7 years ago isn't enough. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think transferable skills. What can I do? I can tell jokes that I've written into a microphone. I will be a kinky stand-up comedian. So in 2010, I became a professional kinky stand-up comic. It meant you could book me at an event to do workshops during the day that were educational and kinky comic in the evening before the dungeon opened, and did that from 2010 to 2020. And then we had a global pandemic. And I can remember coming back from Darklands in Antwerp on the Eurostar, just crossing out everything that I had booked in my diary. Wow. And over the next few months, crossing out the rest of the year. And then over the next few months, crossing out the rest of the next year. And I had to grieve because I know people are actually dying. And this may seem insensitive when there's, you know, real lives being lost. But that was a career I built up in my name that was mine. That I loved, and it was taken away from me before I was ready. So I had to think of something else to do while we were trapped at home for 2 years, unable to go out. And I retrained. And first of all, I got a qualification in life coaching, and then in first aid for mental health. And then as the pandemic continued and the mental health crisis grew and more people coming to me for mental health reasons than coaching, then I got an advanced qualification in mental health. And yeah, it's turned into a full-time job. Now the travel is allowed again, and I'm beginning to go back to events and do comedy and teach again. And I'm thinking, but I have to balance this with the fact I have clients now.
Yeah.
Busy guy.
So if you'd said at the start of COVID, this is where I'd be now, I wouldn't believe you, but my whole life has been one of revelations that have happened to me.
Yeah. I'm curious what the workshops you've mentioned, what do those look like? What do they entail?
Okay. So I get a group of between 15 and 400 people, and we decide on the topic in advance. So I have various things, some of my favorites and some of things I'm asked to teach. So it might be rope bondage for absolute beginners. Like, never tied up anyone before. Don't even know a knot. Bring a piece of rope and we'll do like freeform jazz. Whatever knot you know, we'll just tie people up in different ways. Or if a more advanced rope one is rope bondage for amateur escape artists. If the people you tie up keep escaping, how to do things to stop them, and then how to get out anyway, because I'm a switch and I play both sides. So half the workshop is how to tie somebody up so they can't get out, and the other half is how to get out anyway. But then there's physical workshops we do. I do one on punching and bruising, one on unarmed BDSM, where you don't have any bags, no toys, no money. It's just the human body, one-on-one, or one-on-five, however many. But I love that because it breaks down class and economic status. It just shows that this is open access. You don't need a ton of money to do this game. You don't need to have a lathe in your garage making your own equipment. You can just do it with me and you behind the Coke machine. Mm-hmm. When the airline has lost your luggage, you know, we can still be kinky.
Yeah.
And then there's some classes that are more theory. I've got one called Dungeon Disasters, which is looking back at all the mistakes I've made in my kink life. So hopefully you don't make them as well.
Ah, very interesting.
Is there not to go off schedule, but I'm curious if there's any mistakes you'd be willing to share.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once at the hoist, there was a guy, he was very hot. I was on my knees. He got his cock out. I was going to give him a blowjob. And for the first time ever, his cock would not fit in my mouth. It was the diameter of a Coke can, and what? It wouldn't go in.
Whoa.
Jeez.
So I was young and I was not going to be deterred. So we decided we would let it go down and we would put it in soft and see what happened. Yeah. That was a mistake. I dislocated my jaw, I think. The next day I was shaving because I was clean shaven back then. And as I was shaving, I was moving my jaw from side to side and there was the most enormous cracking sound and my roommate from three rooms away ran into the bathroom to find me layered on the floor in agony. And he said to me, "What's happened? What have you just done?" And I said, "I think it was my jaw going back in."
Oh, my God. That's a valuable lesson.
That's scary. Yeah.
And there was another time at the gym. I went in the lunch hour from work and I had to be really quick to fit it into an hour, but I was getting dressed at the end of the hour and a guy was going into the sauna and he gave me a wolf whistle. You know, he whistled at me to say, "You're attractive." And I'm never going to turn that down. I checked my watch and I thought, well, I can be late back to work. And I got undressed and I followed him in, had sex with the guy in the sauna. And then as I left the sauna, I opened the door and the hinges of the door made the noise of the wolf whistle. So basically some hinges squeaked and I went and shagged a man.
But it worked out.
Yeah, worked out.
Yeah. So I have many of those stories.
That's hilarious. I am curious because we're more outsiders of this, you know, community. Like, what do you think people who aren't familiar with like the kink community, like what should they be aware of? And like, what kind of like lingo is there? Or like, what's in the lexicon?
So there's a new one that I've been learning in the last couple of years, touch consent, which, right? I never had that growing up at the hoist. You know, it was practically nonverbal. You'd go in, there's heavy music, there's smoke, and we'd all just be touching each other. That's like how we communicated. And if you were halfway through and you wanted to finish with somebody and, you know, you'd give them two taps on the shoulder with fingers and just two taps. And that meant like, that's been nice, but I'm going to move on now. So it was pretty nonverbal. So in the last few years, I've been learning about touch consent, that before you even touch somebody, you just check in. Is this okay? And actually, I realized that for many years, the leather and the fetish community has been so protective of their own clothes, like at outdoor events. If you go to Folsom, they're really annoyed when somebody not in leather or rubber comes up and starts touching them. Mm-hmm. Like that touch wasn't ever acceptable. If you're not in gear, you shouldn't be touching people wearing the clothes. But then at the same time, it took us that long to learn we should be asking for consent from each other.
Yeah. Mm.
Interesting. Wow. Well,
yeah.
What about
there's always supposed rules about what you should do. And I always think whenever anybody comes up with one of these, there's just a little voice in my head that says you should travel more. Because the more you travel, the more you realize this is all made up. Everything in the leather community that somebody claims is a fixed rule, yeah, somebody made up. And it may be that your group of people or your city or even, you know, your country has all agreed that's okay. But I promise you, if you start traveling, other people will do it differently. So it's fine for us to come up with rules of the leather community, but let's just also acknowledge this is all made up by somebody. There is no, it wasn't handed down by God. Nobody dug up, you know, bits of stone in a garden. We made this up for ourselves. And as long as you're fine with that, then I don't mind people going, well, you should be like this. Okay, that's your fantasy. I will go along with it because you're hot, but, you know, just travel a bit. Like the whole thing with hanky codes and what if you want to wear hankies in your back pocket of different colors. I think with the internet, this has become a lot more homogenized now that we agree that red means fisting and, you know, but in
I don't even know these rules.
Yeah, I've never heard these.
Okay, so before phones came along, before you could do a profile on an app saying what you're into, we used to have handkerchiefs in back pockets.
Okay.
And if they were in the right hand pocket, it meant you were submissive. And if you're in the left pocket, it meant you were the dominant. And then different colors were for different activities. So if somebody had a yellow hanky in their left pocket, it meant they would piss on you. But if they had a yellow hanky in the right pocket, then they would be pissed on.
Oh,
okay.
And with the internet,
I've heard of this, actually.
This has become, you know, a lot more homogenized that we all seem to agree on the basic things. But before the internet came along, honestly, if you travel from city to city, different colors could very well mean different things.
Interesting.
Kind of risky if you don't know what yeah, it means where you are.
I heard a story of a guy who went into a leather shop and he said he put down his, you know, platinum credit card and he said, I want £2,000 worth of made to measure leather gear from the top of my head down to my boots. And he was so specific, and the shirt had to have red epaulettes and red shoulder pieces and red piping, and the leather jeans had to have red piping down the outside. And he was so specific, it's going to be black everywhere, but all these red highlights. And then he went back for several fittings and they tightened it up and they got it really good. And he paid his £2,000. And then like a month after he walked out with the clothes, he came back and went, do you know what people have been asking me to do? And the shop went, yeah. Well, why didn't you tell me? Because you were putting down so much money and you had so much confidence in the request. We assumed you knew what the color red meant.
Oh, no.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
What would you say in working with people who are kinky, what would you say is the most common kink?
That's like, what's the most common food? Everyone's got a different flavor.
Yeah, true.
And it depends on the culture. In Britain, we have something called the spanner law that means you can't cause an injury during sex.
Well,
you can, but if you do, if you give somebody an injury or you ask for an injury and the aim is sexual pleasure, you've broken the law. So I'd say in the UK, you're far less likely to see bull whipping because it's completely illegal to bull whip another human being. It can be very country specific what the kinks are. It was interesting the year that I was international Mr. Leather, what kind of parties I would get invited to in each country.
Like what?
I am not into poo at all. I know some people are, and there's no judgment there, but I'm not. But the only poo party that I was invited to was in Rome during my year as international Mr. Leather. I just thought, you know, it's such a religious country. It's got the Vatican there. It's really interesting. Yeah. The more puritanical a country is, the more subversive and taboo-breaking their kinks are.
Did you go to that party?
Strangely, I booked my flight so that I wasn't in the city when it happened. But that was entirely accidental. You know, it's just how the schedule worked out.
Yeah. It's a coincidence, yeah.
Whoops. I'm curious. I mean, poo party in Rome does sound a little crazy to me, but what's the situation or like an event that you got into that just ended up being a little on like the wilder side?
Well, the wildest event I went to was Inferno, which is the annual run of the Chicago Hellfire Club. And I went 5 times to that. But one of the rules is it's like Fight Club. You can't talk about Inferno outside Inferno. Oh. So I can't give you any details. But that was certainly the where I saw the most extreme things.
Wow. Mysterious.
I like that. It's crazy.
What do you think are the limits of kink in general? Do you think there are limits to kink?
Every time I think there's a limit, somebody's doing it somewhere. So I don't think there are. For me, it would come down to, do you have consent of everybody involved? Mm-hmm. Do you understand the risks? And I've added a third one recently, which is this doing you any good? So the first one about consent, that means adult sober consent, that you didn't give consent while you were under the influence of something. You know, just because somebody agreed to it last week doesn't mean they're still agreeing to it this week. So consent is very key. That's like number one. Number two is, do you understand the risks? If I was a dungeon monitor, which is the person in a like a high-vis jacket who goes around just making sure everybody's safe if we're doing this in a tent or a hotel room, I would stop somebody if I think they didn't understand the risks they were taking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For instance, if you wanted to set somebody on fire with an accelerant, like with rubbing alcohol, and that's going to run down towards the ground because of gravity, and then the person you're setting on fire, you've hung upside down from their ankles. Well, I would stop that because the fire is now going to be running down from gravity towards their head. Mm. I don't think you've understood the risks. So I would stop it if I didn't think there was consent. I would stop it if I didn't think you understood the risk. And then the third one is this any good for you? This is a recent thing that I've realized, because I've consented to an awful lot that with hindsight was not good for me. And now I think if I see somebody's self-esteem getting crushed, if I see them losing their circle of friends, if I see them becoming smaller as an individual because of what's happening, I would also step in now. Just because you've consented and you understood the risks doesn't mean this is necessarily good for you. And I want kink to raise your self-esteem.
Yeah.
So now when I do workshops, this is a third thing that I'm beginning to talk about, that on paper, something can look like a good match between two or several people, but you got to track your self-esteem if you're aware of it. And if it's going down rather than up, let's have a conversation about that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's one.
I want to give you space to talk about something that you mentioned over email that interested me about the crossover between neurodivergent people and kink.
So there's been no research about how many kinky people are neurodivergent, but just from my own eyes, we have way more neurodivergent people in the kink community than in vanilla society. And I think there are several reasons for this. The first is that I'm autistic. I really struggled in vanilla bars. There was a lot of invisible messaging going on back and forth. Like if you wanted to pick someone up at the bar, that invisible flirting. And I never knew what the rules were. Whereas it's so much more obvious in a kink environment. If a guy walks in with a bag of rope, he's there to tie somebody up. If you come in with a puppy hood, you want to be a puppy, do puppy play. Like a lot of the things that were missing in a vanilla bar for me are filled in, all those gaps, like with handkerchiefs in back pockets. I can literally look at somebody and know what they're into. As an autistic person, all that visual stuff is fantastic. In a vanilla bar, and a vanilla is like a non-kink, so vanilla is mainstream. In a vanilla gay bar, I was often just overwhelmed from a sensory point of view. There'd be a mirror ball, there'd be a drag queen doing entertainment, there'd be a dance floor, there'd be really loud pop music, there'd be shouting at the bar to get drinks. I couldn't process all of that at once. I never knew how. I never knew how people order drinks to bar. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even get the bartender to look at me. In a kink environment, the lights tend to be white and static because you've got to see what you're doing. And although there's music, it's low enough that you can safe word to each other. And you can hear, like if I say to you, "How is that too tight?" I can hear your answer.
Yeah.
You know, so in terms of sensory data, a kink environment is much more like a library. I mean, okay, there'll be German techno in the corner, but it won't be so deafening that you can't hear yourself think. There's so many, the language that we use, So autistic language, we need everyone to be telling the truth. Quite often autistic people are thought of as gullible. It's just there's an expectation that we're telling the truth. Mm. Well, in a mainstream bar, people do all that stuff like letting you down gently, telling you had a good date, you're going to have a second date, but then ghosting you. With kink, we have negotiation before the scene. You better be telling the truth. Because if you tell somebody you are are really good at a particular activity and you've never done it before, you're going to get yourself in a heap of trouble. Yeah. So there's much more emphasis on truth-telling in kink negotiation. I could go on and on and on, but I think that some people who are neurodivergent come to kink not because they are kinky, but because it's a kink-friendly environment and we are using autistic communication to talk to each other. And that just means that they're able to find partners and have sex in a way they can't, and I couldn't, in a mainstream LGBT venue.
Yeah. That's so interesting. It makes so much sense, too.
Oh, can I give you one more example, please?
Sure. Yeah.
So for autistic people, if something is something that we want, we can take a great deal of it. But if it's something we don't want, we have no tolerance at all. So I can't watch TV if there's a bit of light reflected on the TV screen. And it's the same with touch. There's some touch. I really love being punched. I love being hit with toys. But if you lightly stroke me with affection, I will get very angry. And with autistic people, they will have the kind of touch they want and the kind of touch they don't. And it will be very specific. In a vanilla or a mainstream, right, regular sex environment, that's very difficult to explain without coming across as a freak. But in kink, they will love you for that you have the self-awareness. This is how I want to be touched, when I want to be touched, and our safe word when I'm done. I mean, you can just ask for what you want and you get that exact thing in kink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like it was designed for autistic people.
That's a very interesting perspective, actually. That's cool to hear. As members of vanilla society,
yeah,
I appreciate how open you are on this topic. It's great.
Well, I also have a theory that more people are, in the same way more people are autistic than know it, I think more people are kinky than know it. I think what puts them off is the language. So most people, before they have an orgasm, will either hyperventilate or hold their breath. But if you were to say to them, oh, you're doing breath control, that's really freaky.
Yeah.
A lot of people who didn't say they were kinky, but you know, we ended up together, if I put their hands on the headboard and just looked at them like, keep hold of the headboard, they would voluntarily keep hold of the headboard. Well, that's bondage without restraints. That's mental bondage. But if you start using that vocabulary and someone's not kinky, you can frighten them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot more people are. It's just that maybe they've got either preconceptions or there's bits that put them off. That means they're not going to admit to it. Or maybe it's just that everyone I take to bed, I kinkify. But I genuinely think more people are kinky than realize it.
Liam, maybe we're not so vanilla.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. I want to give you a chance to tell people where to find you, where they can find more information about you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as johnpendle.coach. I'm on FetLife as Kinky Life Coach. I have a kinky website that's all about leather called leatherlondonguide.com. And then I have a personal website that's to do with coaching. That's just my name, johnpendle.com. But honestly, if you put my name in Google, John Pendle, as long as you spell it right, I seem to be the only one with my spelling in the world. You're going to get me.
Okay, perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been so interesting and so educational too.
That's okay. Yeah, Are you sure you have no other questions? Because in your eyes, it's looking like we have about 10 more questions.
No, I'm just questioning. I'm just questioning. Am I kinky? And I'm going to think about it.
Most times I do a workshop or a podcast, people are listening and they either come out going, am I kinky or am I autistic? It's like one of the two. Oh, and both.
Well, thank you again. It was really great.
Anytime. It's lovely to see you. Thank you. Cheers.
Wow. Wasn't that a great interview, Chase?
Oh, I've missed you say that. You say it every time.
I always forget that I say that often.
No, that, I do think it's a good interview, and I think John was great.
Yeah, he's cool.
And I would love to have him back. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways,
you have a song?
I'm about to go actually just pass out from looking at those needles in that guy's face still.
Okay, then tell us your song.
Oh, okay. Where You Are featuring Willow by Pink Panthras.
Have I heard that?
I don't think so.
How do you know?
You haven't heard anything. Chase just got diagnosed as deaf.
Oh my god. Do you actually know what's going on with my ear?
Mm-mm.
I can't hear out of my right ear right now. I have heard this song. I can't hear out of my right ear right now, but I went to the doctor and she said it's just like fluids from, I had a cold last week. So she said it'll go back to normal within 3 weeks. So I am deaf in my right ear right now.
Jesus. Well, I had to go to a urologist because my prostatitis symptoms are kind of returning. And he said to take this, I'm taking Super Prostate right now.
Okay.
Which is cool. And yeah, I'm going to go back if it doesn't go away in a couple months. But he said it takes a long time to go away.
So my song is... My song is kind of...
I love oversharing. I'm really cool about oversharing.
My song is very popular right now. It's Bad Habit by Steve Lacy. I cannot stop listening to that song.
Well, I don't know how that song goes. I didn't know Steve Lacy was a real guy.
Yeah, that song's like number one. Number one right now.
What? How does it go?
I wish bad I knew habits. You wanted me. Can I bite your tongue like my bad habit?
Huh? I don't think I've ever heard this song.
It's so
good.
This
is like when Sicko Mode was everyone's favorite. Everyone kept talking about Sicko Mode.
You never
and I was like, I don't know what the hell that song is. And then I heard it one time and I was like, this is Sicko Mode?
Okay, well, I've play a little bit of Bad before. Habit because it's literally like the number one song in North America, at least.
I've never heard this song. I've never heard that song before.
Whatever. It's a great song. Anyways.
You
can find us on Instagram.
Find us on,
Instagram. Why are you saying it?
I'm saying it because it's my duty to say it.
It's at twoservingspod or twoservingspod.com or twoservingspod@gmail.com. We keep it consistent. Also,
it's easy.
Leave us a review for God's sake, because I know people have been leaving us a review, but we don't have enough reviews on Spotify to display an overall rating. And I want
we
enough.
Do. No, I'm pretty sure we do.
No, you're. If it's showing you one, it's just because you left
it's
one.
It's my own review?
Yeah.
Is it?
You're like, we have 5 stars. Okay, let's end it. Say goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.